All right, let's go. All right, here we go. All right, Tim, the Leafs lost last night. I tell you one thing, that when they want to turn it on, that Colorado Cup, they can turn it on.
Yeah, right now they're favored to win the Stanley Cup ahead of Tampa.
Boy, Leafs
are up 4-1.
4-1.
Yeah.
And you could, when you got that second goal, you could just see them churn. And, you know, if the Leafs had kept playing, but what they did was they fell back. And as soon as you fall back and give that a team like that license to go, they go. And boy,
One thing too, I noticed, Dad, that you've always talked about, and you believed that when in that third period, that MacKinnon and Lagnestad and the other guy on that line, they never got off the ice. I think they played close to 10 minutes.
Well, they should have, and that's what I would do. If I had Edmonton, or if I was coaching Edmonton, I put Draisaitl together with McDavid, put another guy on the wing with him, and if they want to put a defensive line on with them, let them put them on. I'd play them about 25, 30 minutes. They'd play half the game.
Yeah, you've always said this, and you watch that sometimes, you know, McDavid, there'll be 90 or 50 seconds gone in the power play, and McDavid comes off, and they put the second line on. That doesn't...
Now, listen, if you're playing the power play, okay, and you had a minute to go in the power play, and you had to hurry up. Yeah, you had to hurry up, or because you know you're going off. What I did with my power play, who was my power? Was Cashman, Busick, and Esposito.
That the first year, year and a half. Yeah.
And then Bobby Orr and anybody on the other side.
Well, Vadney
on the other side, who got 20 goals. And I think he was...
Well, then after that, I think it was Peter, Terry, Middleton, Park, and I don't know who the other guy was.
Shepherd
on the power play.
Yeah, but I would play... I remember one game, was Schmatz, Rattel, and Marcotte. They were on the line. Now they could score 20 goals and be our defensive line,
right? Because you figure those guys got close to 70 goals.
Yeah, so I remember in Buffalo one time the guy kept putting on his defensive line, and every time I'd put on that line, he'd take off the French Connection line. I don't know what it means, so I'm saying I remember the French Connection guy going out, Tabernak, the
college. Yeah, Rene.
Yeah, and they were all saying it. You know, taking off the French line.
French Connection line.
What did they get with 46 goals?
I think they all won. Perot got 50 one year.
Yeah. 46 goals, 35 goals, and I forget what the other one Perot had. Anyhow, that's what I do. If I had it, I would put the two guys together. And if they want to put on a defensive line against them, put on a defensive line. But got to do something, because they're not going to keep going the way they're going in Edmonton. That's too good a club.
So, Dad, Cindy's taking a day off today, so it's just you and I.
Got a cold?
Got a little bit of a cold, yeah. That's a problem, though. You get a little cold, everybody thinks you got COVID, right? So, anyway, we won't go into that because we'll get censored. But the big news in sports, I think, was the football player Antonio Brown for the Buccaneers quit right in the middle of the game, took off his equipment, and walked off the field. And
I'm trying to think of if I had anybody do that. The closest I think I can think of is when Bill the Destroyer Chevets, boy, he was a tough guy, big guy. I always noticed him. He had great big hands. Anyhow, he'd been tough in a fight. He didn't fight much, but he just rammed this. I think it was Orville Tessier.
So where was this and what league?
This was in Springfield.
It's in the American League.
Oh, yeah, it was the American League. Well, so he came off and he started to take his equipment off, and we thought, you know, he was one
so
of those.
So Orville Tessier did.
Orville Tessier started to take his equipment off, and we thought, well, he's one of these guys that there are guys that take their equipment right off and put it right back on again. Gary Smith, the goaltender, used to do that all the time. So we thought, oh, well, and then all of a sudden it's getting nearer and nearer and he's not getting dressed. And Punch Imlach come in. Punch was coaching us then. And he comes in and he says, well, what's going on? So I'm not playing in this stupid league. I said, what do you mean you're not playing? No, and he said, I'm going back to Quebec League with jerks like that in the league. And it was Bill Chavetz. Bill the Destroyer Chavetz.
So what happened? So he just packed his equipment and gone. Yeah.
So they let him go back. And he never played. I don't know if he... But boy, he was good. Orville Tessier was good, boy. He used to say to me, watch, I'll hit the left post, you know, the warm-up.
Yeah.
And he could ring it off the post. He was good. He just didn't like the rough stuff. And it was rough back in those days.
Yeah. It was funny. You and I were talking a little bit about...
Oh, yeah. Well, tell us about Antonio...
Oh, yeah. There were a lot of things. They said that he was trying to hold the guy up for ransom, that he has a $2 million in bonuses.
I didn't know that.
And because I heard on the one of the talk shows, and that he had $2 million in bonuses, and one of the wide receivers for the Bucks was hurt, and another guy was injured, so they were going to rely on him, and his agent called up and said, we want the $2 million guaranteed. And they said no. And,
you know, to do that on the...
Yeah, that's true. I mean, that's not...
That's a tough team to do it on, too, with Brady and the bunch.
Yeah.
So,
but the one thing with that, we were talking a little bit about guys that hit and how rough it was. And we were talking, if you never seen this guy play, Nicholas Cornwall, he was a player for Detroit. He was a defenseman. And he said he used to learn, I think he was, I don't know if he was Russian or not, but he said he learned his hockey from watching Rock'em Sock'em. So this was maybe back 10 years ago.
A lot of guys did, yeah.
The Gruber, the goalie. And he had a knack that you didn't see too often, right? He would really
hit. He was the only guy that I know of.
Yeah. So what would he do that, why he would catch so many guys along and just absolutely hammer them?
Well, what do you like when you're on a power play, and you're a right winger, and you're coming out, and usually you're working your way out. You never expect a guy to get hit, and he used to step up, and boy, would he clobber that guy. The guy would have his head down.
Yeah, because he was like killing a penalty or whatever, and everybody's think he'd be backing out, right?
Yeah, that's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to back out. And he back out, and then he'd come forward. Holy smokes! He played for Detroit a long time.
Yeah, they call it Cornwalled. Well, the guy gets really hit along the boards. He said he got Cornwalled. So if you've never seen that, you should Google Nicholas Cornwall and watch some of his hits. I mean, it wasn't as good as Stevens, but almost.
Oh, nobody's good as Stevens. You know, it's funny thing is Scott Stevens. He's in the Hall of Fame, and he should be in the Hall of Fame. But they wouldn't put up with him now.
No.
No. I mean, he used to absolutely wipe guys out.
I think that one of the best clips, I think, was he was with the Devils, and they were in Detroit, and he hit a guy. I think it was a Russian cutting into center and really leveled him and carried him off. And Dino Cicerelli was chirping at him.
Yeah. Over by the bench.
And they had a close up of Stevens, and he said to Cicerelli, "Do your helmet up. You're next."
Yeah, boy, he was tough, that Stevens.
Yeah, I remember he was on our Grapevine show, and he was just carved out of rock. Like he was a bigger guy than people thought. He was.
Well, he used to wear small equipment, eh?
Yeah, but he was like when he came in, like I was really.
Was he as big as Milan Lucic?
No, he wasn't as tall. And thing, but like he was like he
you.
Was,
you were in a restaurant when you.
Yeah, my wife Ling and I were in a restaurant, and we were. You have to kind of step down a couple of steps in this restaurant in Toronto, and there was like light coming in from the window, and all of a sudden it got dark, and we're looking up, and it was the Bruins came in, so it was Lucic and Thornton,
Thornton was big enough as it was.
Oh yeah, Lucic. He's just like he's like a coke.
He's
machine.
He written a book, Thornton.
Yeah,
something about being tough times, and it's supposed to be a pretty good book.
Yeah, but he was just big. I'll tell you one thing, though. I don't think he was as big as Probert.
Oh, wasn't Probert a giant? Eh?
He was. Like, Probert was thick.
How would you ever fight him?
Yeah. Like, how did Ty ever fight him?
God, you'd wonder how would he ever reach his jaw?
Yeah, really.
and then antagonize him. And, well, we go into that.
Yeah. A quick funny story, because we had Bob Probert on the Grapevine Show, and Dino Ciccarelli was the second guest, because we had two guests a night. And so we did Dino first, because I hate to say it, everybody was there to see Bob, right?
Yeah.
And so Dino came with his mom and everybody. He was all with them. And he brought a blow-up doll of a dinosaur, because in Minnesota, they called him Dino the Dinosaur. Yeah. I don't know why, but Dino, I guess, Dino and Dinosaur. And it was a great big blow-up, and it had his number. We're waiting between shows, and Bob just picked it up to look at it, and it broke. Like, it popped. And was Dino ever mad? He started going up and giving Bob, well, you know how long I've had that? I've had that the thing. I wanted to give that to my kid. He's pointing his finger at Bob's. Oh, Dino, I'm sorry. I didn't mean it. I just picked it up. And then all of a sudden, Bob just kind of gave him a look, and Dino kind of okay. But
enough's enough. You give him a look as if to say, yeah. Enough is enough.
When Bob Probert was on our Grapevine Show, I next to Bob Yor, he was the biggest draw.
Oh, yeah, and then they put him on that show, skating.
Yeah, we talked about that Battle of the Blades, and then the first guy they voted out was
Probert.
Yeah,
and I tuned in, and everybody tuned in to see Bob Probert and Ty Domi.
Yeah, I remember when we did the show. So when we did the Grapevine Show, we would announce who it was coming on, and then people would call in for make reservations, and yeah. Then we call. Well, when the word Bob Probert got out, like, our phone didn't stop ringing. The one girl, the one waitress who was taking the thing, she says, "Who the hell's Bob Probert?" And I said, "Oh, he's a tough guy." She says, "Well, you think he's the Pope?" She says, "The phone hasn't stopped ringing." And then we had to literally lock the door because there was so many people.
Remember, he said he had a bad hair day.
Yeah, his hair was all, because you sat there and you looked, and
his hair was flying.
He looked at me, he said, "Hey, Bob."
Nice hair, too.
What's with the hair?
And his wife, Danny, was there.
Danny was there, yeah.
Yeah, beautiful. Yeah.
But another thing that happened, Dad, this week in the NHL was a goalie, Zach Vukeli, set a record for the
longest. Yeah, you were telling me.
Yeah, for the longest.
I didn't know.
Yeah, for the longest winning, the longest shutout streak from the start of a career. He's with Washington. And we know about him because he played on.
I should have known about him.
Yeah, we played on your prospect team in 2013 in Halifax.
Well, I have bad memories of the day. That was when Brian and I got hooked up. The last time I got hooked up with Brian.
Well, yeah.
And remember the night before, Doug Wilson was there, wasn't he?
Yeah. I think. No, you guys didn't. You guys were pretty. Night before, you didn't do it. This was the day. This was night before a game, you guys were pretty good. You only had a couple, but it was the day before the day before. And boy, I mean, you guys started around 10 o'clock, and Doug Wilson was in the room, and a couple other guys were in the room. And I left at 4:30. I left at 4 in the morning. Doug Wilson left at 4:30. He says, "I can't keep up with you guys."
Yeah, I know.
And
mine is good.
And the empty beer bottles all over the place. And then the next morning, you guys weren't late, 7:30, you had to be down in the lobby.
Oh, we're in the lobby, and I had a headache that wouldn't quit. I can't remember ever doing that game without a headache with Brian. Yeah. Brian's pretty good.
But the prospect game, you can see those kids are always nervous. And then Zach played for the Halifax, we were in Halifax, he played for the Halifax Mooset, and so did Nathan McKinnon that year.
Yeah, Nathan didn't have a good game, he was so nervous.
Unfortunately, neither did Zach, but you could see in their hometown, and it was packed, they were so nervous.
Was that the place that that kid was up in the stand?
Yeah.
Oh, I remember that one. Well, I had a hangover, and I went to the morning practice, and I just happened to wave to this kid, and he waved back to me, and I said, "Well, I better go up and say hello to him." And by gall, nobody told me at CBC that they had brought this kid out especially to see me.
Yeah.
And I was supposed to go up and say hello to him, and or something.
But yeah, we had some disabilities, and he was dressed up like you, and he wanted to meet you, and read you something. And you know what, Dad? I hate to say it. Like, I'm a bit of a cynical person. I just wonder if that was almost a setup.
Boy, that was. I don't think they'd do it though. I don't think they'd do that though
to a kid. I hope not. But I mean, for that to slip through the things and.
Oh, I remember. I remember waving just as I was leaving. I said, "Well, don't."
Yeah.
You better go.
And then you did. You spent about 20 minutes or half hour with them and all that.
But it was that close away from being a disaster.
Yeah. So remember, it was Zach. And but the funny thing happened in that game. They were playing. I forget who they Capitals were playing, but Washington scored in their own net on a when they delayed penalty. And you ever had that happen?
Oh yeah. Oh, you mean the time that Rob Ramage, and he would I don't know what he was doing in the corner, and he passed it back to the point where he should have been.
Right. So there was a delayed penalty. He pulled the goalie. Right. Yeah. He gets the puck at the point. Goes in the corner.
Oh no! Wait a minute. It was a little different than that. Oh, the delayed penalty. That was it.
Right.
Delayed penalty, and pull the goalie. So I can't look, and he passes it back, and I'm looking at Wilf Paymont, and I said, Wilf, he's following the puck. I said, Wilf, don't tell me it's going in. And he said, going in, Graves. I was very unhappy in those days. But
yeah, and Billy Smith was with the Islanders.
Billy Smith was the first goal. He was the last guy to touch the puck, so they said that he scored the goal, but he didn't really score the goal. I guess it's Hextall.
Hextall was the first guy to shoot it in the net. But Billy Smith got the goal. And then I remember we tied that game, so we would have won if...
We would have won the game. And I said, it's not going in, is it, Wilfie? And Wilf said, yes, going in, Graves.
Yeah, but that's the one thing that... with Zach, I mean, that was 2013 that he was in there.
Well, he improved.
It shows you how long it takes a goalie to mature, right?
Oh, you know what, Tim? I wish you'd tell, I've been asking, tell us again, and now this is, I've sprung this on you, tell us again why there's so many European goaltenders and why our goaltenders don't have a tough time. Now, there's 2 years there. I know there's 2 years there. Tell us.
What happens is, we said this, is a goalie gets drafted, say, into the OHL or the CHL, and he's 16 years old. Very rarely does a 16-year-old goalie make junior hockey. So he has to go play somewhere. So he'll either play midget, and midget hockey is not as good as it used to be, right? Or he would go play like junior B or junior C or provincial junior A, and they all have older goalies.
Yeah.
So it takes a couple of years, and so, you know, you can practice and everything, but, you know, you need to get him in the game. And that's what happens. Like, from 16 to 18, there's a little bit of a lost, some last years that they don't get as...
I didn't quite understand that.
Yeah, they don't get quite as much playing time as they should, because, you know, the junior B coach is there and they want to win, and the provincial junior coaches want to win. And then what happened was the CHL stopped the import of European goalies for a while, but then they brought it back. I don't know why.
Well, they brought it back. You know who I'd like to talk about as we end? I'd like to talk about George Plimpton.
Okay, but before we do that, Dad, we would like to thank our sponsor.
Oh yeah, Spread.
Spreads.ca.
And tell how much money they gave to the...
Spreads.ca, it's a Canadian-owned online casino and sportsbook, and if you sign up today, use the promo Grapes, they'll match your deposit up to $500, and they'll give you 10 spins on the big wheel, and your first sports bet, they'll give you
$25.
Yeah, $25. And then what they did was, in December, was whoever... did that promo, however much money you put in, they gave 25% of that to the Don Cherry Pet Rescue Foundation. So if you put $100 into your kitty, they give $25, and they raised over $18,000.
$18,000. Boy, that'll help. That'll help Cindy and her dogs and well, not only dogs, but mostly dogs.
Dogs and cats, and helps, you know, your pet rescue. And what Cindy does is, you know, she helps the smaller pet rescues that don't get a lot of help from
government
and stuff like that. So we'd like to thank them. They did a great job. And we
that is unbelievable. And thank you, people, for betting that way. And when you bet.
I didn't do too well. I did all right last night. I bet
I got a big one tonight. I got Vancouver tonight.
No, they postponed the game. So,
that's right, too.
So I bet the Leafs, so I was up 4-1. I thought, oh, this is in the bag. Wrong. And then I bet Chicago to beat Vegas because I just thought Fleury would stand on his head. And, and I thought the team, Taze, would get to it, and they ended up winning. So
that's who I think that they I like Smith, don't get me wrong. But I think they should get Fleury in Edmonton next year. And
well, not this next year, this year.
Well, yeah. Make it the trade. Boy, he'd know that'd be a winner.
Yeah. And well, you know, Dad, like we were just talking about it, but how much nerve did your general manager, Harry Sinden, have?
Yeah, he must have.
To trade Phil Esposito, who...
And I didn't back him up the way I should have.
Who... What did he get that year? 60 goals?
He got 60 goals, and then he got 73 goals, and...
And then Carl Vadney, who was a 20-goal scorer for a defenseman.
Yeah, and he used to play... And to trade those two guys...
Out of the blue, too.
Nobody knew about it, and I should have backed him up better. And, you know... And Park had a bad knee, and Rattel had a bad back.
Right.
But I knew how to
do that. But I just, you know, some of the GMs, they don't pull the trigger. Like Jimmy Rutherford, he'll do something in Vancouver.
Oh, he'll do something.
But you know, you just look back at Harry, that like right out of the blue, and that's why I think everybody was shocked. And you know, he put his job on the line.
Oh, he sure did.
So, Dad, you and I were this Christmas, we were looking over all the hockey books out, and boy, there's a lot of them right now. So,
and I remember when I did my book, there was two. It was Frank Gore. Frank Gore had his out. And it was a Puck. I think his name of his was Puck is a four-letter word or something like that.
Yeah.
And now there has to be.
It's tons of them.
Tons of them.
So I think one of the best ones, though, was an author named George Plimpton. And it was called Open Net. Yeah. So George Plimpton was an author back in the 70s. And what he started to do was he called it participation journalism, was he would go join sports teams and then write about it. He looked like William F. Buckley.
Only taller.
Only tall guy.
Yeah, and then he talked like him now.
He was like an Ivy League
aristocrat
type guy. And he wrote his first one was, his probably his most famous one was Paper Lion, right?
Yeah, he was a big guy though. He was about 6'3".
Yeah, and he was.
Yeah, and Alan Alda played in the movie.
He was a quarterback with the Detroit Lions. And he did baseball, he did basketball. But one of your favorites, you said, was when he did shadow boxing.
Oh, shadow boxing with Archie Moore.
So we had him on the Grapevine Show. So we'll hear what he's have to say about his experience boxing Archie Moore. And then when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about George.
I cannot believe on my show that I have somebody on that knows Ernest Hemingway. What kind of a fellow was he right off the get going on that one?
He was rather prickly. You never quite knew what was going to happen being with him. I remember asking him once, because I was interested in doing an interview with him on the craft of writing, and I asked him once about the use of birds in his sex scenes. When he writes about sex, Hemingway, very often there's a bird flying around there somewhere, an owl usually. And I shouldn't have asked him that.
You got a little ticked off at you?
Well, he asked if I could do any better.
Now, shadow box, that was one of the first ones because I'm a real boxing fan. That was one of the first books I read of yours, was Shadowbox with Archie Moore, and that was a good one.
He thought I was somebody else, you know, when I got into the ring with him.
Oh.
I had a friend of mine, he's a fellow I thought was a friend, a fellow called Peter Maas, very good writer, wrote Serpico.
Yeah.
And he was wandering around on the day of this fight with Archie Moore, you know, who was then the light heavyweight champion of the world, and we hadn't met Moore. I'd never seen him before. In fact, I didn't see him until he got into the ring. And when I did see him in the ring, I didn't really like what I saw very much, because apparently what had happened was that he had asked Peter Maas who I was. And Peter Maas suddenly got this satanic idea. He said, you don't know who this guy Plimpton is? Well, he's a tall, gawky-looking fellow, but don't let that fool you. He's got one of the great left hooks. He's got a pulverizing right hand. He's an intercollegiate boxing champion. And what is most interesting about him is his ambition, because what he really wants to be in life is the light heavyweight champion of the world. So I had a terrible time in the first round. I got my nose broken, and I got I couldn't understand what was going on.
That's when Harry came to me and said, do you want this guy named George Plimpton? He wants to come to training camp. Well, if I had known that that Montreal had turned him down and Philly had turned him down, I would never. But I figured he's from Massachusetts. I thought he was from Massachusetts.
Yeah, but he was. He's from New York.
Yeah, he's from New York. And yeah, but he sounded like he was from. So, you know, they used to have, when I remember when he first went on the ice, and I could hear, you know, I was the last, always the last one, because if I was the last one, nobody could be late. And I used to hear the puck ringing off the glass, and I knew who it was.
He wanted to play goal.
He wanted to play goal. Well, yeah. Couldn't skate. It couldn't even skate very good.
Couldn't even skate, yeah.
Yeah. So he put it, ring, and I said, Schmatzy, quit putting him off the glass, him and Davey Forbes. I remember the other guy was Davey Forbes, putting him off. He was trying to scare him, eh?
Yeah.
Didn't scare, though.
So then what happened, Dad, was that the whole thing was he was going to go in the training camp, right? And then he was going to play against Philadelphia.
And he was going to play against Philadelphia. And, well, first of all, I have to say that I used to let the guys go. As long as they didn't do anything in the hotel, I used to let them have fun and used to have sessions. And I knew they were going to have them anyhow, so yeah. No use to putting restrictions on it. And I remember talking to him. He said that everybody used to talk all the time and everything. He says, but when somebody talk about Bobby Orr, everything could go silent. I thought that was, I don't know.
Yeah. So he wrote the book was really good. And here we're going to have a clip of him talking about his time with the Bruins and Philly. And then what happened was in the game, Mike Milbury threw a stick.
Yeah, just for a penalty shot.
For a penalty shot as a joke. Because he only played 10, like it was prearranged. It was only going to be a little 10-minute exhibition. And then and then the real game started. So here's George talking about his time.
Well, now, you came to us, and I remember Harry told me that Montreal had turned you down. And I thought, I said, I think we'll start him off with a great roommate called Seaweed Petty. He's from Toronto. Tell us about Seaweed. That was really something. He was a nice fellow.
Was he? Well, he was one of the liveliest, funniest men I ever met in my life. You know, you have to be awfully lucky when you get invited by one of these teams. With the Detroit Lions, it was Alex Karras, who was a wonderful character. Actually, he wasn't there when I played with him. He had been suspended. But I got to know him the following year, and he became the sort of really a focal point in not only Paper Lion, the book, but also Mad Ducks and Bears, which is a book about him. And with the Bruins, the great character, present company again,
yes,
accepted.
Thank you very much.
Was Seaweed Petty. He was called Seaweed because his hair was always in tremendous disarray. It was apparently a genetic inheritance because his father's hair was like that. His father was called Kelp.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. The Petties had a lot of trouble with their hair.
No, we forgot to talk about during that Philly game, you missed probably the biggest brawl that ever went on in hockey. And how come you missed that brawl?
Well, it, as a reporter, it is the greatest story I've ever missed because after I'd finished my 5 minutes in the goal and the penalty shot was taken and missed by Mr. Leach, Sports Illustrated, they had a lot of editors and advertising people and friends down there, and they asked me if I would come back to a room called Ovations, the Ovations room there, and tell them about what it had been like out there on the ice. And so I took my skates off and padded down this corridor, endlessly it seemed to me, into this Ovation room in my Bruin outfit and everything. And I felt terrific. You know, I'd done my 5 minutes, I'd survived, I still had all my teeth and everything. And I'd stopped Reggie Leach's great shot, and boy, I really felt terrific. And there were all these executives in this Ovation room, and I stood there and said what it was like to be out there in the ice and what it was like to have the wings come down at you. And I got rather garrulous, and on I went, describing this and drinking beer. While this was going on, out on the ice, without my knowing about it, of course, Wayne Cashman got into a fight with Paul Holmgren. And they were both kicked off the ice, and the two locker rooms were right next to each other back there. And they got out into the corridor, and they were going to their respective locker rooms, and they began to fight again out there in the corridor. with their sticks, and it was brutal. Yes. And both benches heard this, and they emptied, and this tremendous fight started. It must have been very weird for the audience sitting there, the crowd, because suddenly the whole, both teams just vanished.
And coaches.
And the coaches. It was sort of as if there were a bomb that had under mid-ice, and someone had just told them about this bomb. And they fought back in there, I don't know, for 5 or 10 minutes. They finally got these people back out onto the ice, the two teams, and another fight broke out. And both benches cleared, and they had, what do you call it in French?
Free for all.
A bagage général.
Oh, that's it.
Bagage général. Thank goodness I remembered that. Yeah. I like free for all. And this thing went on and on and on, and finally they managed to, I don't know how many penalties they had, but just about every, there were about 8 people per team
Listen,
left.
Some goals that year. Now tell us the story. Derek Sanderson was there for the training camp. Remember Derek, he found a new way to go into his room. Remember that one?
Oh, well, Petty told me about that seaweed. He said that he roomed with Sanderson 1 year. It wasn't with Boston. I think it was, did Derek had a time with Philadelphia, possibly?
Yeah, yeah.
And they were in a... and they were roommates, and Sanderson used to enter the motel by leaping through the window.
It was strange that way.
He would sort of take a running jump, and he'd go in, and he had a way of sort of landing on the floor and sliding, and it was startling, and used to wake seaweed up and so forth. And Derek would tell him that, you know, what sort of an evening he'd had, which was usually a pretty lively one.
Ooh, tell me about it.
And so on this particular occasion, Sanderson parked his car, and he took this terrific running leap, and he went through this open window and into the motel room of the people next door. And it was an elderly couple. The woman was in bed knitting, and they were watching television, and there was this...
Derek, knowing him, he just excused me, folks. How are you doing?
He went right out the door. Yeah,
right at the door. But you found hockey players different, didn't you, than most athletes?
Well, I thought the great difference, and it was a very interesting one, was that they were, of all the teams that I've been with, and that includes baseball and football and basketball, the by far the most closely knit were the hockey players. And when you went out in the evening, you'd all go out together. I mean, in the Bruins, it was like the Genghis Khan. It was awful. You'd all go out to the same bar together. What was that terrible little
Peter
place?
Peter Pan or
Peter
something?
Peter Pan's in Pittsburgh.
See, I just happened to hear about that.
I thought it was one of your chain here. Yeah.
But anyhow, I'll tell you, I was very surprised. Hockey, like you say, are very close-knit and they're very clannish. And nobody ever got in to their little sessions. And I knew you were a great guy when they let you in, I'm telling you, because nobody ever got into those sessions that they had. And I'll tell you.
You know why? I think it was because I got hurt.
Yeah,
I bled. I did a stupid thing. I threw the hockey stick down and caught the puck. Being an old baseball player, I caught the puck in that little golf glove.
Yeah.
And it sliced his finger, and it bled on the ice. And the Bruins were just delighted.
Oh, they said they cheered and everything.
And they came over and they looked and they said, "Look at that!" And
you're
said,
one of them.
Yeah. And they said a tooth would have been better.
So, Dad, that was something. He laughed. The players would have liked it better if he lost a tooth. That was funny.
Yeah.
So, but tell us about. He didn't really get in. Tell us about that brawl in Philly. That would have been the brawl to end all brawls, I think.
It was unbelievable. That Holmgren and Cash, and they're in the same corridor, if you say, wasn't very wide. And Cash, they went up, they were kicked out of the game. They had stick fight or something. And Cash, he says, "Next time I'm going to get your other eye." And Paul Holmgren was very sensitive about that. He can run it down. Oh, it was unbelievable.
Didn't they put a gate to call it that?
Well, they call it the Cashman... Cashman Gate.
Because they had to stop, yeah.
They had to stop, and there's a big gate there. And the whole team, both teams emptied up into the corridor. There was nobody on the bench. So I better go up. And we laugh about it now, but it wasn't very funny. All bodies all piled on top of one another, and guys are crying. And I mean, it was really something. Guys couldn't breathe. And I went in and I said, "If you go in and you're serious, they won't let each other go. Come on. I grabbed him. "Let's go." I said, "The bar's closed at 2:00. We won't, you know." That's the only way you could go in and grab those guys. If you went in there serious, they wouldn't let go. So finally, we got to, I think we had six guys on the bench at the end of the game.
Yeah, because right after that, there was another brawl.
It was a brawl to end all brawls. It was all over the place, and that's why everybody loved to see Philadelphia.
the exhibition games between Boston and Philly were harder to get than games. But I remember the one thing he didn't say, and it was in the book that I don't think I'm doing a spoiler, that when he came in, all the players gave him a hard time. They said, "Where were you?
Where were you? We needed you." And he said, "Well, what happened?" And when he told what happened, he says that was the biggest disappointment of his news, of his writing career, that he wasn't there for the brawl.
Yeah.
And he was up being interviewed.
Well, he says in the interview he was up getting interviewed. But then the players, like, cut his tie and cut his pants and everything.
Oh, they cut everything, cut his pants off, and they had fun.
So they really accepted him, eh?
They really did. And they didn't at the start. They were kind of ticked off at the start that, you know, with the training camp and everything like that. And but they really did. They really, really liked the guy at the end. And you know, the one thing he said that he thought that was different was that, you know, he went to football and all those sports, basketball. He said the hockey players read books that he never dreamed that hockey players, for their reputation, they would have. They read more books, and they were more intelligent than any athlete he'd ever been associated with.